was the middle of the Second American Civil War. The world had gone to hell. The year was 2017, the worst year of my life. There was only one free city, and that's where I'd lived for 3 years, Port Steel Harbor.
Don't call me babe. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 122. I'm Scott Johnson, and joining me tonight, fresh from Nerdtacular, we have Brian, high heel to the face Dunaway.
Hmm. Wait, before we jump off this building, you asked me if I've ever seen Batman. Do you mean Adam West Batman or George Clooney Batman? Because the cheesy dialogue makes me think you mean Adam West. But your nipple suggests Clooney. First with the boob jokes.
Nice job on many.
Nice
job on that. I'm impressed.
Yeah. Boobies.
We hear that a few times in the show today.
Boobies.
Oh, yeah.
Also with us, Randy. Speaking of this, Randy, boob toucher lady table Jordan.
Yes. Very good. Aloha, Brian. Brian, Scott. Bye. So this week on FilmSack, we set out to remake Casablanca only with tits. We've got the war, the bar, the tits, the bar owner, the choice between self and noble purpose, the tits, the memorable lines, the well-placed music, the tits. We've even got a final heart-wrenching scene at an airport that brings together sentimentality, man's inhumanity to man, hope for the future, and tits. Come to think of it, this may be better than Casablanca. In this one, Humphrey Bogart is a Baywatch girl in a corset.
By the way, the FCC just called.
Nice. Isn't it funny? Boobs, okay to say. Tits, a little harsh.
It's just we have an allotment. The government lets us have like four.
George Carlin would say it's a much cuter word. Tits. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's
a happy little word.
Yeah.
Rounding it out today, Brian, don't call me babe, Ibbit.
I think there's going to be a theme here. Mm. Crappy acting, poor directing, and a screenplay that should be taken out back in the shot. There are only two things that make this movie worth watching. Mm. Mm. Clint Howard and the Rottweiler.
Nice. Good job.
Oh, you bastard.
Claire, was it? You or Clarence? Bastard. What was the name of that dog?
Camille.
Camille.
Was it Camille?
You just served up a silent punchline on a silver platter and then took it away from me before I could eat.
It was good. That's it was right. Perfect.
You bastard.
Classic stuff there, Brian. I mentioned this is our first show since Nerdtacular, and I just want to say before we get too deep into things, fantastic time had by all, and the film sack portion of the day never disappoints, and it was a riot. So thank you all who were there for all your support, those who've downloaded the episode since and enjoyed it, and given us such great feedback. Thank you, guys. I hope all of you can one day attend a live taping of FilmSack, because it is one of the highlights of my day. We should go on the road.
We should tour.
Yep, let's do it. Ooh, first up, Neely, Nevada.
I was thinking Maui or Oahu.
Oh,
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
sure.
Can we start?
If we're going to tour, let's do it up.
Our first five stops are going to be like Kihei, Honolulu.
Brilliant. Oh, and the tour ended. Brian had a broken ankle.
Which are all also names of characters that Randy plays.
Very well said. The movie's Barb Wire, not Barbed Wire. It's Barb Wire.
Because that would be silly.
It'd be silly, right? Yeah.
And it's not Barred Wire, which I put in my notes.
No.
Like Barred.
Barred Wire, no. It's not Barred Wire. It's none of those things. It's Barb Wire, and it stars the lovely and talented Pamela Anderson Lee at the time. She still had Lee on her name.
Good decision.
Yeah.
To put that in a movie forever. Happened.
Did anyone else spend a good chunk of this movie trying to think up female character names that could be found in hardware stores?
No. But now that you mentioned it,
the best
like
one
fun.
I could come up with, and they also, by the way, they make great transvestite names. Mm. The best one I could come up with was Anne-ville. I really
Anne
like that.
Hill.
Yeah, I think it's a great name.
This is the way they do porn names, right? It's the same method.
How about Makita Drill?
Oh. Yeah, there you go. That's a good one.
Ooh, I know. I like that.
All right, hold on. How about ball peen hammer. No, that doesn't work as well.
Wow. That's just awful.
Stanley drill press. It's not working. It's not working.
It's a hard game.
All right. Well, Scott Fletcher makes it easier by swooping in and telling us this.
Barb wire. It's 2017, and a second civil war has left America under the control of a military junta. The last refuge of freedom is Steel Harbor, where bustier-clad biker Barb Wire, played by Pamela Anderson, runs the Hammerhead Bar while maintaining ties with the fascist feds and the freedom fighters. But when former paramour Axel Hood, played by Tamura Morrison, now part of the resistance, turns up asking for a favor, the apolitical Barb is forced to choose sides.
Jango Fett, dude. That's who that was.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit of Jango Fett. Also Boba Fett in voice. And also...
every single stormtrooper.
Commander Cody. All the clones. What was he called? Cody, the head clone guy? Something Cody. Right? Commander Cody?
Oh, Commander Cody.
Yeah. Yes, he was that. Right. He was that as well. Cody. Yeah. What a dumb name.
It's got to be weird to play the character that ends up becoming every single person you never see under those masks.
It really is weird. And it's also the time where... It's one of the moments of dissonance in Star Wars where I went, now, wait a minute. Shouldn't I be able to now go back and watch A New Hope or Empire and all the stormtroopers should sound New Zealand-ish? Shouldn't they all right, sound like right. this guy now? Because that's what they've led me to believe. All these clones now share his stupid voice and accent. Well, not stupid voice. The guy's got a fine voice, but...
But there's a scene where there are two stormtroopers yell at something at each other, and they have different voices. And obviously, George Lucas hadn't thought that far ahead.
No. Well, he'd tell you different, but yeah.
Look, sir, droids.
Yeah, those are droids.
Yeah, those look like droids to me. Maybe there's some weird cross mating going on, and it just
there was a little extra something in that batch of stormtrooper.
Right. It's got to be weird in the locker room, right? At the end of the day, like on a galactic cruiser, you go to the locker room, and there's all these people that are identical clones to you getting undressed.
The way Ibbot described that, I picture in my head a giant vat, a swirling vat of white goo. With flecks of black in it to make up what constitutes 1,000 stormtroopers. That's great.
Like the locker room joke, though. Dude, that's my tell. Seriously, what difference does it make, Bill?
All right. David Hogan directs, written by... Okay, no, I should give a little history here. I read the comic book before this was a movie.
Oh, that's right, it was. Dark Horse comic.
Yeah, and it was, you know what? Pretty good comic. Like,
right.
Actually, pretty good. Like, this is one of those... It's like that Tank Girl one.
Right.
Or that kind, it was that kind of era for 90s era, sort of edgy, I don't know, post heavy metal, pre, I don't know what comes later, but right. just kind but like, of, there's a thing, yeah. there's a time for that, right?
Mad Maxian kind of apocalyptic, right.
Yeah. And they do it in the comics with such a wink and a nod with the way they handle the heroines and the way that they deal with sort of action on the page. I think it actually works out really well, and Dark Horse had a lot of cool titles that did this, and right. I remember really enjoying the comic book and being somewhat excited that the movie was coming out, and I never saw it then because the reviews were so bad, and word had gotten to me that I'd be not only wasting my time, but it would ruin my comic experience, that I just avoided it, so I never saw it. And learning later that the reason the comic ended its run pretty quickly after the movie did was because the movie was so horrible.
Right.
That it hurt sales of the comic. That's how bad it was.
It pointed out every bad thing about the comic. There was a lot of good stuff about the comic, too, but it pointed out all the bad stuff. And you're like, oh.
Yeah, they didn't do anything right. So is this, I mean, before we get to the meat of everything, is this even in the top three worst films we've seen or no?
No.
I would put it certainly in the top 10.
Yeah. It's in the top 10 easy for me. Maybe top five.
This was hard to watch bad.
Yeah. This is our 122nd film. So you're saying that it's also in the top, 8%.
Yeah.
Worst. I don't know. I enjoyed it kind of.
Give me one. Okay, then fine. Everybody say what their worst one is, just real quick. I know it changes and evolves, but what is the worst thing we've seen? I still say Retrograde is probably the worst, but this is licking at its boots. For me.
Yeah, as far as unwatchability, I'd say Retrograde. As far as the worst movie I wouldn't mind watching a second time, it would be, Troll 2 or Star Crash.
Yeah. I'd love to see those again with you guys, though.
Mm-hmm. Both, yeah, that would be the only way I could. Yeah, that'd be the only way.
But see, like this movie, Barbed Wire, no desire to see this again.
Right.
Never again.
Right, right. I'm going to have to say that I it's more recent and it also had Clint Howard in it, and I just can't watch Into the Line again. I just
that was really awful.
I liked it Into the Line up to the halfway mark.
It was hard.
The rest was bad. You're right.
But there's a difference between movies like Freaked, which are truly awful movies, but you feel like there's something you could enjoy somehow. Mm-hmm. Like you could enjoy the badness of it. There's, you know, there's differences between that and like Free Jack, which is just a shit movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to watch that again.
No.
Right. No.
I forgot about Freaked. I didn't like Freaked at all.
I don't like
that.
Either.
No. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I hated Freaked. But
I don't want to watch Swamp Thing again. I'll tell you that.
Ooh, yeah, I do. Swamp Thing I would watch with you guys, though.
I would love to watch Swamp Thing again.
So that for me is the separator. Is it something I could sit down with you three and watch again? If I say yes to that, then it's not as bad as Retrograde.
But right. do you know what I'm saying? Like,
but there is a difference between a bad movie and then a bad movie that you wouldn't mind watching again because it's kind of funny bad. I mean, Troll 2 is a good example of that. Yeah. I think Star Crash, any of the, you know, the Jason the Argonauts, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But I'd never want to see this movie again, ever. Yeah.
Ever? Really? Yeah. Not even for the boobs?
No. Those aren't even real.
No, and you can see him, believe me, you can see him far better and far less obscured and
on the internet,
in various bits of media. Yes. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, she. I should also say this early as well because we always talk about movies and ladies and stuff. She is the opposite of what I think is attractive in any kind of woman. I do not find her at all attractive. Hmm. I never have. Let me tell you when I thought she was actually attractive in the movie, and you're all going to probably guess this, but. She was actually attractive to me.
In the flashback.
In the flashback and all of her army fatigues without all that freaking makeup. Right.
Yeah.
And
that is attractive to me. Now, I know that sounds weird, but what I'm getting at is I go for the cute girl in a sweater way before I go for the hookery blonde with the terrible ugly makeup and their fake boobs and all that. I'm not into that at all.
No, I mean her early Home Improvement days when she was a brunette. She looked great.
Yeah, she did look good there. I'll give you that. I forgot she was a brunette, but yeah.
I'm going to say that if you replace Pamela Anderson with just about any Mila or somebody that
object.
Yeah, somebody that I would actually I can buy as a action hero. I think this movie's not that bad.
Really?
Overall.
Okay.
It's just her.
No, I got to stop you there because I genuinely believe that the entire point of the film visually is her in a corset. Like, if you take that away, I realize you could just put someone else in a corset, but there's something about her. The specific. I read that she got her
much like Barbie doll.
I read that she cinched her waist down to 17 inches. That's just unbelievable.
Oh, jeez. Eat a burger, my hell.
But the ridiculousness of the stunt doubles fighting moves, clearly not wearing a corset. She was wearing something that looked very, very much like that corset. But the ridiculousness of all that stuff, I think, is kind of cool. Like, there are some fight scenes where I was genuinely entertained by the thought that Pamela Anderson was actually the one swinging around, doing those kicks, jumping over tables, and so on.
Yeah, I was going to mention that as well. So there is some action sequences in this film that actually are pretty good. They're decent. You know, they stand out too. I think in this sea of mediocrity. Otherwise,
who could it have been in '96? Is the question. If it wasn't Pamela Anderson,
could have gone for America's Sweetheart, Sandra Bullock.
That would be awesome. That would be.
She'd be all right.
So yeah, be a different, less
about
trashy.
5 years,
way less trashy.
That's about 5 years before Miss Congeniality, right?
Yeah, something like that. It would, but it was right around. Let's see, '96. That would have been. When was Speed?
I think it is 94.
She was a little soft then, but
when did Gina Davis do Cutthroat Island? Gina Davis might not have been bad in this, or Demi Moore.
Yeah, Demi Moore.
G.I. Jane. Yeah.
She was happy to be showing her boobs around.
Right. You could have kept
actually Demi Moore took the Razzie Award away from Pam Anderson this year.
Oh, really? What was the movie?
Striptease.
Striptease is a terrible movie. Here's what saves Striptease, though. freaking what's Burt Reynolds in Vaseline and cowboy boots. Yeah. That was an awesome role. Like that movie is such a shame because that's the thing that got buried in a piece. It's like a, I don't know. It's like a bright shiny nickel buried in a turd, and you really got to dig in there to get it. Anyway,
what do you think about Madonna in that role?
Maybe. Circa what, like 88, something like that?
No, 96. Like, this is the year that Madonna won a freaking Golden Globe for Evita. Oh, and yeah. I'm asking, could she have been barbed wire?
Yeah. When was that?
Late 90s, okay. 98, 99.
Right. When was Dick Tracy? Because that's kind of that. She could pull that off.
No, she was in Dick Tracy, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she could do that monologue over they did and everything.
I don't think she can deliver a line any more believably than Pamela Anderson.
Here's a problem. Okay, let's just get the problem with this film. The reason we don't like this film is because it's absolutely full of awesome dark humor, and never once is it delivered in a way that you get that she's telling a joke.
Yep.
Right.
And if you just had someone with some comedic timing. There were so many jokes where a minute after it was delivered, I realized, oh, that could have been funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, the thing is, I don't even think she's that bad of an actress on the whole. I used to watch a lot of that VIP show she did.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And you know what? She's okay in it. She's like, she's not terrible in it. She said lines and said funny things and was believable in the character she was in. I think that this is just a bad director. This guy's... I mean, his credits are lousy anyway. This is the only movie he ever really did. He did a documentary, this, a bunch of music videos, and was second unit director on Batman Forever. Nice. So he's got a little bit of the, what's his name in him? Who's the Batman guy? I forgot his name. Who did that?
Schumacher.
He's got a little Schumacher in him. And that's never works for anybody in the late 90s, I don't think. No. So I'm just saying, I honestly didn't feel like it was so much her as just kind of bad directing. They'd have a really cool sequence of action, for example, and do a ridiculously bad we would only have done this in 1963 kind of cut to somebody's face, but the action was good. It was like really well cut, well edited, boom boom boom, and then a really awkward face from Jango Fett or something, and you just went, what? You just had me for a second, and then you freaking pissed it all away the last second. And so I feel like there's a director problem. It wasn't that bad with her in it. And she was doing like a bunch of martial arts stuff. She was really into that then. I was reading Wikipedia or something saying that when she got her boob reduction again, so she had the enlargement and then she went, oh, too big, because she was in the middle of training and it's hard to be a kick-a, you know, martial artist while you got two giant bags flapping around.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like nunchucks, you know, it's not like a good idea at the time and then you just always hit yourself in the face with them. So
big black eye, right?
Right.
So... anyway, I'm just saying, as much as I hate doing this, because again, she's not my type, she's not my style in any way, I find her annoying generally.
At least she doesn't look like your mom.
Right, nothing like my mom. Nothing like my mom. That is the fountain that just keeps on giving.
I'm actually kind of glad about this film. I never once thought about whether or not I thought she was sexy or sexy enough. Mm. Never crossed my mind. I was constantly wondering about the outfits and so on. You know, like, could she even breathe in this scene? But I never once thought, oh, there could have been somebody, you know, that looked very different or whatever. It just didn't cross my mind.
What attracts me is smart, tough, normal girls. So she was none of those things in this movie.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I just thought, so maybe I'm the same as you. I just was sort of like, meh. And when you stop caring, I guess I kind of just stopped caring about her as a character at all. And I started getting more interested in some of these ancillary characters. Like
that was my thing.
Yeah.
The blind guy,
Charlie.
Who
reminded me of the Friday Night Lights kid, Taylor Kitsch, whatever his name is. That guy.
Oh, yeah.
What's his name?
Oh, really?
Riggins.
No,
Tim Riggins.
Not Taylor. Really?
A little bit of Tim Riggins in there. Just a little bit.
I would think more like Jesse Plemons, the... if you're going to go Friday Night Lights, I'm thinking the nerdy guy who was not Jason Street's friend, but the replacement quarterback friend.
The redhead with the band.
Yes.
The Plemons character. What the hell is
that? Yeah, little nerdy guy.
whatever his name is.
Named after a famous football coach that I can't place right
Landry,
now.
Landry.
Landry, yes. Tom well, Landry. See,
really? Because they had all the hippie hair and the...
Well, you take the hair out of it, and he's, you know, he's a little nerdy blind guy that, you know, apparently has all of his other senses heightened except for the sense of which movies to do.
Oh, nice.
You like that? That almost was my...
That's yeah. I almost opened with that.
I like you're still using your second openers there in the middle of the show.
I recycle.
The opening wet strip in which Barb dances at a strip club with her breasts hanging out and her rubber dress and all that being sprayed with water. This was suggested by Pamela Anderson, according to the official trivia. After she, I say it official, according to IMDb, after she was inspired by a nightmare she had in which she was being sprayed with champagne whilst performing a, quote, nasty dance, unquote. David Hogan, director, who was under pressure to include more nudity, liked the idea and threw out the movie's original opening to include it. What director is sitting around going, oh, this pressure to get more nudity in here?
Darn it, I've got Pamela Anderson in the film. Oh, I really wish I could get more nudity into this.
Oh, my phone again. Hello, this is freaking David Hogan. David, how are we doing on that more nudity? I don't mean to be putting any pressure on you, but more nudity. Well, give me a break. Yeah. I don't think I even believe that whole statement.
No. And then she's saying, well, I guess, you know, maybe we could open the film with me dancing around and you spraying water on me. And sometimes my boobs will be out. Sometimes they'll be obscured.
Yeah. Nipple continuity was a big problem for me in the very
beginning. Very bad nipple
film. No, all throughout the film. Yeah. This is not the only scene in which she's almost naked. Like, there's a bubble bath scene. There's a changing behind a silk screen scene. And they had a really hard time with. You could tell that a lot of people came on set for the shooting of those scenes.
Yeah.
And they shot a lot more footage than they did for other scenes. And then they had to edit it all together in a way that it made sense.
Mm. Nipple continuity.
Nip-annuity.
Conta-nipple.
Contit-nuity.
Contit-nudity? What?
Oh. Something like that.
Something like that. Listen to this, though. This is kind of interesting. And it bugged me through the whole film. The date on Barb's license plate said July 1st to 2019.
Yes.
Right.
The movie's supposed to be set in 2017, so that's weird.
Right.
But
on her, like her driver's license or whatever that health card was.
Right, but if you jump ahead.
I love the health card.
If you jump ahead to 20.
Like past that.
Right. Sorry, but if you jump to 2019, July 1st, that's actually Pamela Anderson's birthday. She'll be 52 in that year.
Right. She's 45 today.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a mistake there, Scott. I think that they come along at the beginning of the film and say the apocalypse happened in 2017 and then this is all happening 2 years later, but they just didn't say that.
Oh.
Right.
Well, they were really bad at making it seem normal that the date flipped ahead. I mean, not that I need somebody to go 2 years later.
This movie hinges on continuity.
I don't even know what's real anymore, but it is. It's kind of a weird thing. And then this other thing about the director. So this is weird. Does this make any sense to you guys? Adam Rifkin, the original director, Adam Rifkin, was replaced as director with the less experienced David Hogan after producers decided early dailies were unsatisfactory. Here's what you do. You got a guy with a bunch of experience. You put out some dailies. People are like, not sure this is going well. Let's replace that guy with someone with less experience than he has.
Right.
That makes no sense to me.
We need somebody younger and hornier who can give us what we need.
Understand our pressure for more nudity, I guess.
Right.
Still, there wasn't as much nudity as I was expecting.
Mm. Yeah, there was less.
After the first scene, I'm like, all right, there's going to be a lot of TNA in this movie. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't. There was actually a lot more gunplay than I was expecting.
There was some silhouette, we call those silhouette
boobies
in the middle of the movie where she was changing. But it's also one of those tropes, right?
But really, I didn't think it was any hotter than the ones we saw in The Golden Child, to be honest with you.
Fair enough.
By the way, that's a horrible trope.
What is? We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. It's where woman goes off and changes and talks to you while you're squinty-eyed and at her and having a conversation.
And you're not her lover or... Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
or her gay friend. You're like a cop who's trying to investigate her or something. And she's just all, why don't you sit in my chair? I'm going to come over here and show myself to you.
No, you're the French archaeologist from Raiders of the Lost Ark. You're the countless other examples of this. This happens all the freaking time. It's not even worth playing the trope sound for. It makes me instead, I'll just say this. I'll just have a grunting man. Take that. All right. I already talked about how I think Pamela's gross. I think she's just gross. Best thing I think she ever did, though, she voiced a fantastic episode of Futurama once.
Oh yeah, right.
She was a head in the jar, but she was great.
And I'll tell you that. The best thing she ever did in my eyes is the Comedy Central roast of David Hasselhoff.
Oh yeah,
it's unbelievable. Her performance on. I actually found myself comparing Barbed Wire with that performance 15 years later, and thinking maybe she got some lessons.
So what's good about it? She's just funny.
She's funny. She's funny as hell. And I realize that on these roasts, a lot of times comics will write jokes for non-comics, like Artie Lang wrote jokes for George Takei. But even if the whole script was written for her, she delivered it perfectly. Mm. She's the second best thing on that roast. Maybe
that's proof of what I was saying. She just needs the right project / director / help to get something awesome done, you know?
And it's also proof that nobody wrote anything for the situation when he
was on the roast. That is still the worst thing that's ever happened in life, right? Isn't that still the worst? It really is.
You know, yeah.
Ranks right up there anyway.
Yeah.
Tommy Tiny Lister. So we haven't done a movie with him yet. Have we? Well, anyway, he's the guy from Fifth Element. He's the president.
Dark
Knight. He's the inmate in the ship that throws the detonator out the window.
Right.
And he's the fat guy in the freaking shovel in this.
That's Andre Rosie Brown.
Yep.
Zeus
Tiny Lister is at the very beginning of the movie. He's a bouncer, and he really has no role in the film.
The whole time I thought he was in the truck with
Chick in the Hut or whatever you want to call him. I don't know.
Andre Rosie Brown was big fan.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
How do those people in movies end up being boss and continue to be boss? Like, I noticed how Jabba the Hutt was boss and continue to be boss, and this guy, he's the morbidly obese. You never see them in control of anything.
In real life, the people who maintain control by violence are physically violent people, and
they're mobile and they can have some agility. Right?
Yeah.
Get me out of this bucket.
You want some trivia here? Yeah. Okay. Blow your mind. All right. So Clint Howard, we'll talk about him, sure, in a minute, was Tango's cellmate in Tango and Cash.
That's right.
Andre Rosie Brown, the big fat guy in the shovel, was Cash's cellmate.
Oh, stop it.
Wow.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Wow. See everybody next week. Thanks for joining us.
It's the double Tango and Cash connection.
That's crazy. That's quite the crossover. That's fantastic. Okay, well, now I feel like an idiot because I thought, and don't send me emails going, Scott thought because he was black, it was the same guy. You know that's going to happen. That's not what I really thought. They had him all in makeup, and I kept thinking, he's great at this. That's really weird. So he died, by the way. Andre Rosie Brown died in 06 at only age 50.
Really?
I wonder, hold on, let me scratch my chin and wonder why he died early.
He was always kind of bigger, but this is the biggest I've ever seen him in a movie, and I figured they just made him up a little bit.
And I thought I thought a lot of that was just, prosthetics and... draping of his dashiki or his Jamaican blanket. Yeah.
My favorite credit he has is he was a guest star on ER in 2000, and his character, he is credited as Sick Guy, which is fantastic.
Right.
My favorite credit for him is 50.
Say what, Brian?
He lived to be 50, so, you know. Yeah. Oh, sorry, Brian.
50's young now, isn't it? That's too young.
It is, but not when you're like, you know.
Oh, so you are saying he's huge and fat. I see what you're saying. It's not just
my favorite credit of his is the fact that he can smell a bag of donuts, inside a greasy bag
before he just walked up with.
Look in.
You mentioned Clint Howard as Schmitz. I would like to put forth that that's the best name in the movie, Schmitz.
It is.
It's just a slimy bastard in this. He's great. He's all the Clint Howard you want.
Yeah, and he's safe from nuclear explosions. They put him in a refrigerator, so it's good.
Yeah, what'd you guys think of the caulking foam that she blew up? Can you explain that to me? What was going on?
It was supposed to have come out of a shaving cream can.
Right.
And the idea is that it's an explosive that comes out as a foam and then hardens very rapidly, and you put a charge to it, and it blows a hole in the wall.
It was window sealer. It was stupid.
That scene had probably my most hated trope in the film.
Mm. Let's play that for that. Hold on. Here we go.
I've said this a lot recently. You hit someone in the head once.
Yeah.
It always knocks them out. And they always stay out for exactly as long as you need them to. Exactly.
I don't know. She hit him in the head with a paddle. That's vicious.
Yeah, it looked like his head too.
Looked like a damn cricket bat. Like it was a major piece of. But come on,
this is the S&M dude in the rubber suit. Yeah. This is the guy. Yeah.
Don't you just wish just once? And I'm sure this has been parodied many times, but I just wish once in a film that was doing it seriously, they got hit and turn around and go, "What was that for?" And
I have to
hit
him again. What the?
You know, like just hit him a couple of times. I don't know.
That only happens when it's a giant person. And you think hitting them once is all it's going to take, and the thing shatters, and then they slowly turn around and look at you.
That's another trope right there.
And those things are in, like, Indiana Jones, I swear, they have every trope ever made, because that guy and the big German in the airplane, that whole bit.
Right.
Same idea.
That scene, I had to rewind that scene because I thought maybe I'd missed something, but did she really go seduce this one guy to go make him wear a gimp suit, beat the crap out of him, blow a hole in the wall to get a guy? Why didn't she just freaking kick the door
through the hallway? Right. But into that building.
Let's just say she needs the room next to it. Why does she need the fat guy in the gimp suit to get into that room?
She doesn't. She doesn't.
But she did need to get into that building because it was, the heavy security situation.
Oh, and he had to use his eyeballs.
Yes.
Because he was
about the retinas.
Jim Bob Rosenbaum or whatever his name was.
as soon as I saw that there was a blind guy in a film that had a bunch of retinal security, I started figuring I started giving the film a lot more credit than it was going to ever earn.
Oh, it never paid off any of that ever. Yeah. But you're right. I thought the same things. I'm like, all this retina scanning, going to get some big payoff with blind boy. Nope.
Exactly.
Instead, we're just going to cook him like a piece of bacon and be
done. In that world, a guy with no eyes could be extremely powerful because he could operate with a lot of anonymity.
Yep.
Yeah. And you know what?
Or he can't get into anything and he's useless.
Usually in movies, they kind of overcompensate for blind people and they make them have like almost superhuman powers. Yeah. This dude was an idiot. I mean, he was a blind person that he always thought he was clever and he always failed.
Except for one thing that he was able to figure out where Clint or Schnitz hid the friggin'
chink.
Nice thing they never explained.
Yes.
Right.
What, did he just go around at night when no one's around and feel under all the counters? Come on.
Apparently. I mean, he was right there paying attention during the hiding, but, paying what attention? I love his very first line is to identify Chanel number 5, because my very first thought was, wow, that's still a thing, huh? Wow.
Probably one of the most popular perfumes at the time, too.
Was it 96? I don't know. That seems like 80s to me, wasn't it?
Yeah, just like, but you're saying 20 years on from
all right, 2019,
Gosh, what's wrong with you?
So he was, okay, sorry if this seems totally obvious, but he was her brother? The character of Barb's, wasn't he supposed to be playing her brother in this?
I didn't get that.
Why does she care so much what happens to Charlie? Just they all feel bad.
They got close in the military.
I thought someone said your brother Charlie at some point. Maybe I just heard all that wrong. I don't know. The credits for this movie are all jacked up, by the way. There's like 4 pages down. I finally get to Jack Noseworthy.
A blind guy played by Jack Noseworthy.
Yeah. I know who that is.
Yeah, he's been in some things.
Event Horizon, right?
It's alphabetical.
Yep. Oh, yeah, Event Horizon. That's how I know him. Okay.
Yeah. I still say we got to watch it.
I love Event Horizon, dude. Love that movie.
You might not like it as much.
I don't know. All this Prometheus negative talk, I kind of want to watch that again just to get my space horror fill. Mm. So what do you guys think of...
I still love Prometheus.
You're talking about the guy with the melanoma on his face.
Love that man.
Yeah.
Why did he have a melanoma on his face?
I don't know.
Don't tell me it was a tattoo.
It's the future. Everyone's got melanomas.
I get him confused with Armand Asante.
Yeah, same guy. They're both overly tanned a lot of the time.
Right.
I think that's a fair mix up. I also thought he was the guy in the first Human Centipede, but he's not. he might as well be. I wasn't just going to say, for some reason, the name Marcus Welby just came in my head and it totally threw me for a loop.
I loved him in this movie.
That's weird. All right. Yeah. This guy, so he's kind of known for a bunch of schlocky horror movies. He's been in lots of things with Clint Howard in him. I find his presence really, really compelling. And so my favorite thing in the movie, near enough of him, but he's great.
Everybody who's a real actor were delivering their lines so well that it was making Pamela Anderson look even worse.
Yeah, if that was even possible.
I swear, I kept thinking that Pamela Anderson was looking around for crabs, and it was Krebs.
Oh, Krebs. Yes. Oh, for crabs.
I thought so these European accented types were calling her Bub over and over. And I realized after a while they were calling her Barb. I thought that Bub was like her nickname.
Like Logan.
The way they pronounce Barb.
Wolverine kind of thing going. Yeah. Yeah. That's hilarious. I also, if she's looking for crabs, she could only just look at us. That's terrible.
I can't find crabs.
I got a bad case of them, but I can't see them. Okay. Oh, I got a trope for you. Here's my favorite. This has come up in movies before. We keep forgetting to mention it. A monologuing evildoer gets spit in the face mid-sentence. So you're being held back either by cuffs or arms. Somebody's got your arms. He starts monologuing and go, "This will only be my greatest pleasure to see you die slowly." And then he slowly wipes it off his face and tries to act like whatever. Every freaking movie has this in it.
Right. I felt like this was I felt like I was watching this, and then I felt like somebody creeped in Children of Men.
Oh, yeah, a little bit. Line. Yeah.
Right there. That felt weird to me.
That's such a good movie, though.
Yeah.
That's a really good movie.
their whole storyline seemed like Children of Men.
Daryl, the Trek nerd who sends us our Trek trivia or our Trek connections for this show, has always mentioned that he thinks that there's at least somebody barfing at least once in every film ever made.
Right.
This movie totally jammed one in. That guy barfing out on the bikes. That was great.
Oh, yeah.
I was happy to see the tradition continues.
Right.
With a bit of that business. All right. What else?
I would like to bring everyone together to agree on the largest, most evident common trope in the film.
What do you got?
The berserk button. Hmm. In this particular movie, it's "Nobody Calls Me Babe." But in every movie where you have a badass, that badass has a berserk button.
Yep.
And
Lethal Weapon was great at that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. I could give you so many examples. I'll give you my personal favorite, the recent Star Trek 11 film. They decided to give Spock a berserk button. You could stand there and insult him all you want about doing his math or how slow he is at this or that, but you insult his mama.
Yeah. Right.
And he loses his mind,
yeah.
Which they later called being emotionally compromised.
Mm.
Back to the Future, Marty McFly, "Nobody Calls Me Chicken."
Right.
Man, there's too many. I can't. My head is full of them, but I can't enunciate any of them. You're right. It happens all the freaking time. This one's dumb because. So here's the trope. If you haven't watched the film, then shame on all you out there. But she has this thing where she doesn't want to be called Babe for some reason. Now, I found out the reason that exists as a line in the first place is in the comic, there was a competing book by another publisher called Babe, and it was almost an identical premise. Hot chick, kicking trash, comic book. And so the joke in the comic was, "Don't ever call me Babe," which appeared in that comic, was like this stab at this other comic. In the movie, it has none of that context. So in the movie, it's just like, oh, she just doesn't like to be, you know, some kind of misogynistic term to call her Babe. So at the end of the movie, they can't think of a better way to bring up that berserk button than to have him say, "It is like my favorite song of all time. I've got you, Babe."
Right.
And then she freaks. And I just thought to myself, and I thought of Ibbot, of course, because of the music, but I just think, man, that's really dumb, you guys.
Like, right. That's the best way you can think of to have him call her Babe so she can go berserk.
My favorite movie from the 20th century was Babe, the one about the pig. I mean, you could have said any of those things. Yeah, and it would have been just as dumb. Oh,
they should have had a cameo by Sammy Davis Jr. Just talking to her. That would have been my favorite.
The ghost of Sammy? Yeah.
Right, Babe.
And that would have really pissed her off.
The berserk button is so much fun.
That's a good one.
Right. But it's too it's too overused. Everybody does it.
Yep. Well, as long as we're in tropes, I got a trope.
Oh, we were...
Yeah, the countdown. Blind guy, character knows. Character knows situation or person so well they can count down to the second when something will happen. Yep. I can't even actually predict when the red light is going to change. I don't know how they do it in the movies.
I don't know.
Yeah, what's up with that? Man. What's up with that?
Three.
That's two. Yeah, here comes the hit. Here comes the hit.
One.
How do you, what if, like, maybe he does it all the time and we just got to see the one time he was right.
He always gets it wrong. Three, two, one. No, nothing. Nothing. Nothing.
Man, screw you people.
But apparently, you know, smelling the woman with her boobs sticking out and the little black things over her nipples, she leaves with her perfume and he's still talking to her. So it's apparently a very flawed skill set he's got.
Right.
I forgot about that part. The blind guy didn't do anything. I still say they were related. I think it was supposed to be siblings.
No, because then he would have had a funny name like Short Wire or...
Short Wire, Blind Wire. Don't cut the green one. I don't know.
Right.
Green wire.
Don't. Well, her last name's not Wire, though.
Well, everybody thinks it is because they keep calling her Miss Wire, which I hate when they formalize nicknames.
Yeah.
Miss Wire, shut up.
Right.
All right. Fair enough.
Every now and then, somebody on Twitter calls me Mr. Deluxe, and I always wonder. I
love that one. That's
why'd
a good
you
one.
Do that?
I don't even like Mr. Johnson, and that one's accurate.
I did enjoy that every time they did an establishing shot in front of the Hammerhead bar, which she owned, there was always somebody getting beat up out there. That was actually made me laugh.
That was pretty good. What'd you think of that final fight, Brian? Like the whole the crane. Well, this is the second time recently we've seen a big crane fight.
Right.
What was the other one Cherry 2000? Was it?
It was a crane fight, and it wasn't even the Karate Kid. And I thought it was fantastic.
Oh, I see what you did there. Crane fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nicely done.
With the absolutely unnecessary Jango Fett. Oh, what does this lever do? Oh, this moves it around. Okay, and this one. Okay, bam, for no reason.
And why is that guy just chilling? Like, just, hey, what's going on? I bet you if you just said, hey, dude.
Get the crane all day long until they had a job for me.
Yeah. I haven't paid my dues this month.
Yes, like, I'm Brian Regan, why do you ask?
But I kept thinking, why don't you just go, if you're going to go in there, just punch him the first time, or just say, I'll bet you that guy just move. To say, right. Dude, I need this thing.
Totally
okay, thanks, no problem, I'll check out early, we'll see you. You didn't have to crank him like that.
Got one last trope for
all right.
You. The ever-present reminder that there was a girl in a fight by having somebody say something like, I broke a nail.
Mm. Oh, yeah, she did break her nail. That's right. Right.
We've seen it in Tremors. We saw it in Spaceballs.
Yep.
Countless
movies.
Like, the whole scene, all we're looking at is you and your boobs and your butt and your corset and you're fighting and you're kicking people's eyes. And she literally throws a high heel through a guy's forehead.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right. Do I really need to end a fight scene with, I'm broken nail?
No, they
you
don't.
You know, and I'm sure, and if we think about it, there's got to be one where the broken nail is somebody's berserk button just to connect the tropes.
Yeah, right?
I'm trying to remember, like Miss Piggy or something.
Yeah, something like that. But, I mean, you're making a movie that the comic book arguably was about the empowerment of this woman, like her taking the society gone crazy and taking the power back and her being in charge of everything. There's something to be said for that. The movie just tosses that away by making it overly sexualized, overly stupid, and having her talk about her nails.
And a trope like that actually makes the strong woman look weak it makes her look stupid because, you know, if you're going to fight like that, why would you have those awful acrylic nails on in the first place?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, have you never worn nails before?
You get Lee press-ons for those fancy times when you got to seduce fat guys in rubber suits.
Have you read?
Oh, that was so
yes. Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, let's.
Hey, can I ask a question before we do that?
Go ahead.
The Black Witch.
Whoop. Sorry.
Okay.
Did not mean to say that.
What was the last year, and I don't know, maybe it still goes on, what was the last year that we saw a lot of movies that said that used the saxophone when there's sex and city involved? Because they use that a pretty good bit, and I thought this was kind of late, 96.
A lot of guitar riffs, though, too. A lot of...
Right.
Like that kind of stuff. I want to say that ended... I think it ended... I think The Matrix obliterated all that.
Right.
99, I'm going to say.
99.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think there's a fair amount of it up to 99.
I'd like to have some sex saxophone in Matrix myself.
Right. And they would never do that, right? They just have the propeller heads or something else. And so I feel like that stuff ended right around 99. And we finally went, wait a minute, you guys, we can't do this sax thing anymore. It's terrible.
Right.
Oh, but this film starts with the gun cover of Word Up and makes me so happy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's got some great music in it.
Well, okay. The licensed music, yes. A lot of covers were good. But yeah. The soundtrack, like the score, if you want to call it that, horrible. Mm. Horrible.
Horrible.
Because it was all... Do it, Brabbit. You can do it. You better me. Do the... Nicely done. All right. Let's do some clips here. We got some clips.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Let's start with this little introduction to tell us what's going on in this future world.
The old democracy is overthrown by a tyrannical new group called the Congressional Directorate. Every city in the nation is under martial law, except one, Steel Harbor, the last free city. A secluded island of shrinking independence, it is a place marked by chaos and crime, providing a home for a new kind of mercenary.
Mm.
Nice. So at what point does the director go, okay, we can have some scrolling text, or we can have some narration over some video. How about we do both?
Well, it's for the hearing impaired, right?
It's no? Charlie.
Maybe not. That's Charlie. For Charlie.
This is for you, Charlie.
but when I heard and that happens in a lot of movies, but when I heard that stuff up front, I got a little excited because I thought, yeah. I like this stuff. I like when you talk about dystopian futures and overthrows of government and only one free city left and martial law and all this stuff stuff's just patently interesting to me.
Yeah. Right.
But then it didn't deliver on pretty much all of it, but that got me going. Like I was, after this movie's over, like I had to go wash my mouth out with like a copy of one of the Mad Max movies or something, you know, just to get a taste of what this can be.
Yeah.
Or watch, you know, Book of Eli or anything. I'd watch anything at this point just to fill that need because I have that need. This movie just didn't do it. Didn't do it at all.
Close.
Here's that ever see Batman line that Brian brought up. Was it Brian? Whoever
yes,
brought me. This up, yeah.
What are you doing? Ever see Batman? No, I can't.
I can't see Batman. What?
I can't.
Is that because she used a grappling hook? That was the Batman bit. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Ever see Batman?
I guess because second unit director was the director, right?
Ever. Did you ever see Batman Forever? No.
No.
Wait. Which one? I guess you already used that joke.
Was that?
No, I'm sorry.
Wait. Forever was the Kilmer one, right? Yeah.
Batman Forever?
Yeah, because Batman and Robin was the... was
now we can't remember. It was just...
What a horrible film. Here's one of my favorite Where's My Money lines.
Cut the shit. Where's my money?
Cut the shit.
God.
Where's my money?
Such a ham-handed delivery of like
she's
every
not,
line.
Yeah, she's just not threatening when she talks. I think that's my problem.
I know I've done this before, but we need to do an episode of Film Sack where all we do is talk like this.
Oh, I don't know if I could keep it up the whole time.
Right.
Alfred, call Lucius. I need a thing.
Where's my phone? Bring it.
Well, two out of three ain't bad because everything has to be like a phrase.
A one-liner.
Yeah.
A one-liner, yes.
We should do something in that vein. I don't know if it's a whole episode, but we should do a little theater, you know?
Right. I was shocked that wasn't put on for a part of the film, but that was just the way she spoke the entire film.
Yep.
Did she always snarl? Like, I never saw a single episode of Baywatch or VIP or anything like that.
Really?
Did she always
You never saw a single episode of those shows that each had
saw.
1,000 episodes?
Yeah. Never saw a single episode of Baywatch. Never saw a single episode of VIP.
I didn't ask you to repeat yourself. I asked you to go a step further and give us some reason how that's possible. Like, oh, I didn't have a TV in the 90s.
At one point in time, Baywatch was the most...
Simon and Simon? I don't know.
Right. I'm with Ibbot. I never watched Baywatch.
You never saw Baywatch? Well, here, soak this in then. Hold on. There's lyrics to this song. Check it out. Listen to this. This is the Baywatch theme. Hold on. There's words. That's kind of coming. Here we go.
Some people stand in the dark.
It's one of those guys. It's one of those guys.
Right.
Do you know, until you just played that, I never realized how much that is like the Enterprise theme song?
It totally is.
Oh. Wait
it's
a second.
That
wait a
guy.
Second. Scott has never seen Boogie Nights, right?
No, I've not seen Boogie Nights. No.
Oh, so you don't have that whole you've got the touch crazy scene in your head when you hear music like that either.
I don't.
You need to watch Boogie Nights just for that scene. No. The scene where John C. Reilly and Marky Mark try to make a record.
Oh yeah.
And they try to do the "You've Got the Touch" song together.
You've got the touch.
Oh my God!
I'm not
awful.
Doing it right, am I? How's that going?
Sure, you're doing it right.
You've got the touch. I don't know.
Yeah, you're thinking "You Got the Look" by Roxette.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of. She's got the look. Yeah.
Name that incorrectly sung tune. I can do it in three notes.
Somehow, through the power of Terpster Vision, we won the thing in Nerdacular. I don't know how else we did it. All right, let's get to the blind dude. He is where he's introduced.
Chanel number 5. Am I correct?
Yes, you are.
When I smelled it, I thought to myself, Charlie, now this is obviously a woman of significant breeding. And then I thought, I wonder if she'd like to do some. Nice. Breeding, that is.
Breeding.
See, this made me hate him. Like, right out of the gate, hated him.
Yeah.
So it was really hard for the film to ever make me sympathetic to the character because his first line is, it's not just a bad or cheesy pickup line. It's awful. It's
you're thinking he's going to be a character who's going to get a high heeled shoe in the forehead,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
And he says things like, "Just break that line down." He says, "I was wondering if you'd like to do some." Now, if you stop there, what would that even mean on its own? Cocaine,
right? No,
breeding. He had just said use the word breeding.
Yeah, at the end, and then he said,
"No, right before that too." He had
what?
He said,
"No, hold on."
Chanel. Yeah. And then I thought, I wonder if she'd like to do some.
No, go back a little bit.
Charlie, now this is obviously a woman of significant breeding. And then I thought,
oh, I get it. Do some. Oh.
Breeding.
Well, the fact that I had to figure it out now makes it worse.
Ridiculous.
That's horrible. All right. Here is my favorite. You guys like it when I, or you know, I like to do it. Let me back up.
Oh, yes, you do. You like to breed.
I like to do it. I like to find incredibly awesome sounding neck breaks and things in movies. Like whatever's
Van Damme
movies.
I'm glad you got this.
Yeah.
I'm glad you got
this. This one's a beaut. So check this thing out.
Sweet dreams.
All right. One more time. One more of those. Okay. Ready? Here we go.
Sweet dreams.
They didn't just break his neck. They broke his whole spine all the way down.
At least they didn't do it with electricity. I got so tired of electricity torture in this movie.
That guy's scream was the equivalent of like a Homer Doe. It was like, go! Right.
Yeah, I'm guessing we're going to hear some laughter
soundboard
in a second.
Yeah, let me do one more.
Sweet dreams.
That's awesome.
Sweet dreams.
All right, here's the pervert guy. Or the pervert guy, whatever he was. The S&M guy.
Did you wash your hands?
No.
I'm so glad to hear that.
That was
pretty.
I've seen that guy
before,
somewhere.
Yeah, in a gimp suit at your house.
No, like on TV or
talking action.
I've seen him on movies. All right, everyone, line up and meet Clint Howard
and Barb. It's a pleasure to see you too. You're looking rather buoyant this evening.
Shut up.
Oh, there's a boob joke.
It's absolutely buoyant. It's true too, when she was in the bubbles later on. They were definitely floating.
He's a bad actor, you guys.
Oh, yeah.
He's bad. He's not, okay, Apollo 13, he's good for what they gave him.
Yeah.
Anytime he does stuff for his brother, it's fine. But when he's on his own and it's, you know, what was that one, the chicken one? Carnosaurus or whatever.
I've got to watch that.
Giant chicken. He's just terrible.
He's so creepy. He's perfect at it. I mean,
he's got some good teeth.
That's what he wins at.
Yeah. Somebody the other day said, "Oh, your bottom teeth are starting to wear off a little bit from your overbite." And I'm like, "Yeah, but then there's Clint Howard, so shut up."
But there's Clint Howard. That's your comeback.
That's my comeback.
But then there's Clint Howard.
My sister's like, "Oh, what's wrong with your bottom tooth?" I go, "Oh, it's nothing. It's not that big a deal." "Oh, you could probably go get that." I'm like, "Ah, Clint Howard." Clint Howard, everybody.
I'm fine. Clint Howard.
Steve Buscemi's the second one I go to if they don't know who Clint Howard is.
Oh, nice.
So Clint Howard, who's Steve Buscemi? Your friend back there in the chipper. All right. Let's do Sticky Fingers.
He was a drunk with sticky fingers.
I just like the way that sounded.
Well, if he would wash his hands.
I like that guy, though.
Bathroom.
The cop. He was very bad. Yeah, he's
24. Excellent. Is
it yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what 24.
He's also in Air Force One. He's one of the Secret Service agents that turns on President Solo.
Right.
Tries Solo. To kill him. I forgot his name in that. You guys don't even know the fan I am, the fanboy I am for Air Force One. And to me, that movie embodies.
It actually is a very good movie. I've seen it many times.
Love that movie. Yeah. It's ridiculous, but it's great.
So absolutely. Awesome.
Here is the greatest threat any man has ever levied against another in the history of the world.
I will personally rip your heart out of your ass and stuff it back down your throat.
Yeah!
Your heart.
He doesn't even say your... He runs his letters together. Listen to this one.
I will personally rip your heart out of your ass.
Rip your heart out of your ass. I've been drinking.
Heavy on that H.
Heart.
Went to the Nicolas Cage School of Acting. Thank you very much.
To really see what I'm on about Black here, you witch. Have to yeah. you have to be able to see me because I'm kind of pantomiming this, but... I don't think your arm is long enough to rip my heart out of my ass. I'm just kind of look at the distance here.
You might have to use the other arm to push it down through the throat a little bit.
Oh, okay, I'm definitely doing that. It.
Have you guys ever heard that thing? I don't know if I feel comfortable bringing this up here, but there's supposedly people who believe that the most intimate thing you can do to another human being is to touch their heart.
Oh, my God.
Right. And so the way you do that.
Okay, let's just stop for a second. Whenever you say, I don't know if I should bring this up, that's a good sign that you should just throw it to the next whatever.
I think I heard that on some, it's like a Ricky Gervais thing or something where they were talking about. I know. That was the Ricky Gervais part really got you going there.
Is he talking about Indiana Jones there when he grabs
not that kind of heart touching, though.
No. Oh, okay.
It's either down the throat or up the rumper, I think is the point. Anyway, nice. Sorry, everyone go back really, to your
yeah. There's not much more intimate things you can do.
That's pretty much the center.
A lot of really awesome contenders for the most intimate thing two people can do, and I'm sorry, but, you know, opening up the chest cavity, no, not even on the, probably not even on the list.
I think it'd kill you. It'd pretty much die, right?
If your partner was a great cardiac surgeon, no, but...
With some kinks.
Yeah, if you go through the chest, but if you go one of those other routes, boy.
Well, I don't even... It seems impossible through the
either way, the really.
Scott, you going to source this nonsense, or are you just going to...
No, because can't you wrap, like, one person's intestines around the moon three times or whatever it is? It's not that long, but you know what I mean? Like, it's got some huge length to it.
Yes, YouTube video or you're lying?
Easy to source, though, Scott. There's all sorts of actual science that... show how long the average small intestine is. This people want to touch each other's heart. I just don't. Okay, I'm not buying it.
All right. It's just yeah. I just
that's that was
a,
fun.
That was fun. Let's do this again. All right. Moving on to where I don't even know where I am. Let's see. Heart flips. So we just did sticky fingers. No, we did hearts out of here. Hey, those two are tied together now in my brain. Here we go. Not very sanitary.
That's not very sanitary.
I just. Because I don't know why.
Okay.
Just like that guy. How'd you get in here? Where's my dog?
How'd you get in here? Where's my dog?
I guess I'll just repeat what she said.
I'm good with the ladies. Yeah.
Actually, I think I would imagine that came from the script, not like you almost opened up a plot hole. Mm. And this person writing it had to cover the hole back over. And the dog, by the way, is one of the things that made me sad in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Really simply put, this is a Rottweiler who is somehow trained to, when you tell the dog that it needs to attack somebody, it runs over and bites them in the crotch.
Mm, right. And which makes a noise.
Yeah.
Package check.
But yeah. It was just, it made me really, really sad for the dog. Like, imagine your job to bite some strange man. I really want you to imagine that I'm asking you, I'm commanding you to go bite a strange man in the crotch right now. You'd be like, no, I'm not going to bite this guy.
Yeah. You obviously let me see your experience than I did.
Yeah, let me see your medical right. card.
Just let me see your medical card.
You're all up to date.
Thank you.
Oh, very good. all right. So this
are you,
is.
Are you arguing that dogs like to bite guys in crotches? Because
that's the first place they go to sniff.
Right. Exactly. That's where they always go, man. They're always sticking that nose in there. I mean, it's like stop.
I would argue that they don't. I don't understand why that they would fill that plot hole by making the mention of where's the dog. and they wouldn't fill the pothole friend. Of like, why did Charlie somehow find the contact lenses tube in the kitchen? Right. That's still
That was like, what was up with this contact tube thing anyway, man? That was like the biggest contact container ever.
It's the future. Yeah. Right. It's the future.
Retro.
Yeah. Those little plastic things with the two hinged separate doors for each eye is so obsolete. Of course. 90s.
Right. It is, right? So 96. Listen, if I'm going to play this clip and it will just demonstrate how dumb the contacts are as a plot device. Just terrible. The way this sounds. So it sounds fine at the beginning, but then just it falls apart.
You are charged with concealing information regarding the whereabouts of a certain pair of contact lenses.
How dumb does that sound?
A certain pair of contacts. You know which ones I'm talking about. Why are you looking at me?
It sounds like Brian Dunaway talking.
Did it? Let's try that again. Hold on. Listen.
You are charged with concealing information regarding the whereabouts of a certain pair of contact lenses.
I can totally hear it.
That is freaking me out.
Flash Gordon, bring me the contact lenses.
Hey man, how horrible are those contact lenses anyway? I mean, like, okay, sure, they can fool the retina readers, but I'm pretty sure if you see somebody with bright blue eyes, I think you're going to know they're up to something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, for those not familiar.
Booby slave. Booby slave, retrieve me my Mingo phone. I need to contact Flash Gordon. Attack.
I love that.
That never gets old. No. Which is why I saved it. All right. Finally. Or not finally, two more. The best weird laugh. I always look for the weird laughs. Here's your weird laugh of the day.
Yeah. Remember that? Ugh,
gosh.
Wow.
That was awesome.
A little out of control.
Went on for so long, too.
It went on, too. It was very uncomfortable. That was the crane operator, wasn't it?
No, that was crazy guy burning
that's right.
Blind
that's
dude.
Taylor burn. Kitch, yeah.
Burned the blind kid.
the crazy guy burning the blind kid. Remember? Yeah.
Did you see this movie?
Yeah. And then there's the Big Fatso line I captured. I don't remember what it is.
That wasn't part of the deal, Big Fatso.
Oh, he's not even talking. It's just her calling him a name.
Yeah.
But I wasn't sure that was really his name. I thought she was just being rude.
That's what everybody called him, though.
They just all called him Big Fatso? Okay.
Well, I guess when you're that big, I guess you can call him wherever you want to. What's he going to do?
You know, but if you take it out of that context and just imagine that she's just being mean, then listen how this sounds.
That wasn't part of the deal, Big Fatso.
It sounds like a 7-year-old.
Right, yeah, it really does.
It's pretty good. And that is your clips. That means award time, everybody. Let's levy some awards in the direction of this fine masterpiece of filmmaking, which won many Razzies in its own right. So we probably won't have to give it anything. I'll give it the Django Fett Award, though. First award out of the gate, Django Fett Award. Also, the Hey, Our Army Dudes Look Like Nazis Award. Way to go. Not since Star Wars has... Your regular police people look more like Nazis.
With a reservoir tip.
Right,
even.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reservoir tip. I wrote that down. That's so weird. future Nazi condom suit with reservoir tip. That's nice. What I wrote.
Brilliant. Awesome. The Hey, That's a Douchebag That Almost Got the President Killed in Air Force One Guy Award. And finally, That's a Waste of a Perfectly Good Bar Award goes to this film. I thought that was a nice little club they destroyed.
Yeah.
Trek connections. Obviously, Clint Howard, who played Schmitz, also played Balok. In the Corbinite Remover, the kid. That stupid little kid with the voiceover. Or the dub. Nicholas Wirth, who played Reuben. He was on DS9. Played a Lysippian captain in Progress. DS9, A Simple Investigation, played someone named Sorm. And then Voyager plays Lonzak in an episode called Bride of Chocolata? Wait. Chaotica, sorry.
Bride of Count Chocula.
Bride of Count Chocula. It was a fantastic film or episode. Ron Balak, who played Customs Agent Number One, he played several background characters in season 2 to 4 of TNG and of Enterprise rather. And then finally, Shelley Desai, she played Sheriff in this. She was in TNG. She played the Bullion Barber Vassal in Data's Day.
And, I love that episode.
And don't forget Tommy Tiny Lister, who played the bouncer, also ended up in the Broken Bow episode on Enterprise as well.
Oh, yeah.
Soundtrack, great. I'm giving it SS for this sounds like an episode of Silk Stockings to me the entire time.
Yeah, I think it was.
Real bad.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's your awards. There's your music. And let's do a Twitter post. In 140 characters or less, Randy, please sum it up.
Barb wire. Netflix said, our best guess for Randall, 1.6 stars out of 5. Well, screw you, Netflix. Barbed wire was, at the absolute least, a 1.8. Mm-hmm. I hate torture bikinis.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, the torture bikinis. Yeah, didn't come up yet.
Yeah, you know that the thing on her chest was a nipple twister.
Totally. Just going, little fingers going, wee!
Oh, I hate Portugal.
Turn that all up to high. Turn that to, what, a 360-degree turn. I don't know what they do. Dunaway.
Barbed Wire. Some bad movies are saved by charm, some by heart, sometimes even a unique twist. Or Kevin Bacon. This movie had Nazis, rock and roll, and boobs. Man, I really want this to work. I really did.
It seems like it has all the ingredients.
Right.
Sadly undercooked. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
Barbed wire. Just like the object for which it is named, this film is full of pricks. It's probably very cheaply made. And if you put it on a fence, I'll stay far away.
Nice. Nice. It will keep inmates at bay. Well, here's what I learned while you ruined a perfectly enjoyable Dark Horse comic book. The face scanners of 2017 are freaking huge.
Right. On a lollipop stick at that.
Ginormous.
Yeah.
Those are great. Robot voice lady drove me up the wall. She was the resistance leader chick that got hung. I couldn't do her voice.
Right. Weird damages in the future. Sometimes you get your eyes retina it out. Sometimes you get shot to the neck. I don't know what it's
your throat ripped out or whatever.
Right.
When I become king, I too want my throne to be the shovel end of a construction vehicle. And finally, the ultimate weapon in 2019, a common forklift. And that's what I learned.
I learned that Barb's nightclub is something that only happens in movies.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, in the real world, a nightclub that contains more than like three attractive women also contains about 15 times as many men.
Yep.
And in the movies, the ratio is like 1-1.
And the ladies look like they want to be there.
Yes. And every single person in the place is all perfectly lit with their own like spotlights. Can you imagine how disconcerting it would be to walk around in a club where there are all these little spotlights following you?
Yeah.
Well, you're expensive.
You're the main attraction.
Hired.
You got all those stage hands up in the loft there, aiming lights at everybody. You got to pay freaking dues. Those guys are union. F that. Got a couple emails. One from Brett from Florida. That's America's penis. He says this. Why five different Dolph Lundgren sacked movies and no Jim Carrey? All right. So what do we say to that? It's a fair question, but I don't know that there's just a ton of Jim Carrey movies that just are screaming to be sacked.
They're intentionally
Earth
funny.
Girls Are Easy would be the first one that comes to mind that I think would be film sack fodder.
Okay. I don't think I've seen it.
Wasn't he in what vampire movie was that?
Was he in a vampire movie? Well, we want to do Batman. Batman Forever probably deserves to get sacked at some point. And he plays the Riddler in that.
He was actually pretty decent at that in the Riddler.
But we're never going to sack something like, Pet Detective
Truman
movies.
Show.
Yeah, or Truman Show, or any of those. Mm-hmm. They're either too... Like,
Once Bitten, which would be a fantastic movie.
Once Bitten?
Yeah, I find it really hard to film sack a comedy. Personally. Yeah,
I don't like it. I don't like it much. It depends on the movie, maybe a little bit, but we'll make an exception.
Also, like some comedies that you think, some things you think of as comedies, and maybe they were funny at the time, aren't anymore. Yeah. Like Break Into Electric Boogaloo just ain't funny anymore.
No.
Right.
You know? No, but like 9 to 5, you could probably say, well, yeah, that's a comedy, but it's different. There's something different about it.
Right.
Yeah, we did Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. That's considered a comedy 20 years ago, not anymore.
Yeah, it's not so funny now.
Oh, but it was a great episode of Film Sack.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed it.
Once Bitten, looking at the thing that Brian sent. That's a
Jim Carrey movie?
Yeah, that was right before he really started getting his stick, and he was kind of just trying to fit into the kind of actor role, and he didn't really do his stick too much at all, so it's...
I remember seeing him like a made-for-TV movie drama once. It was well before any of his stuff on In Living Color or any of that. And I remember him trying to play it all straight and serious. And it was really weird to see that after then seeing something like Dumb and Dumber.
Right.
Oh, which, by the way, he's out of that sequel now. He's not doing it.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, what's the point then?
Yeah, right.
Dumb and Dumber, we watched it. Yeah.
Yeah, the Dumberer one was not even with them at all, but they were working on an actual true sequel with the Farrelly brothers, and they had both him and what's his beak signed?
Jeff Daniels.
Diarrhea, Jeff Daniels. And he's in the middle of doing that new show on HBO.
It's great. Newsroom, really it good, is yeah. really good, yeah.
But I think he's still signed. You don't do your you can't not have Jim Carrey in it.
No.
All right, I'm clamped onto this topic like a Rottweiler and a ball sack.
Okay.
I would argue that Howard the Duck, Young Einstein, and Revenge of the Nerds were three excellent episodes of Film Sack.
They were, and they were, but see,
they're different though. Like, they're not, that is not the same as Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Mm. Right.
There's some, I don't know how to quantify it, but there's a difference.
I know what he's saying though. I totally see what you mean, Randy, because those, I do remember those being a lot of fun. Was it about? Howard the Duck was just so bad though.
Yeah, Howard the Duck was poo. That was less of a comedy though, and it was supposed to be more of an action adventure kids movie.
Can you hear me making the sound of the nutsack?
Maybe the sequel. Maybe Ace Detective 2 or whatever it was called. Tom Merritt, Ace Detective 2.
Tom Merritt? Ace Detective 2.
You got me there. I didn't see that.
Took me a second there. Very nice. Matt Lafferty wrote in from Point Pleasant, New Jersey, which is such a contradiction in terms. Says, hey, Scott, I know you have an especially busy weekend. I just wanted to pass along my renewed appreciation for all the great things that FilmSack does and all its great episodes. This past Monday, I had outpatient surgery. My recovery hasn't been all that difficult in the grand scheme of things, but enough discomfort so that there is to be spotty sleep at night and lousy naps during the day. Revisiting old episodes of FilmSack has put a smile on my face as I try to snooze at 3 a.m., though I always seem to wake up to Randy saying something high-mindedly contrarian. Anyway, thanks again. Have a great weekend, Matt Lafferty. Well, Matt, we hope you're recovering from whatever the hell that is you're dealing with. That sucks. Surgery's no fun for anyone, even in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Mm. And glad to hear the show brings you some comfort. Randy, give us something high-mindedly contrarian right now. What do you got?
Wow.
That's tough.
You know, I had like 30 seconds to prepare that, and I totally didn't realize. I didn't see it coming. That was amazing.
I didn't see that coming. I
forgot. High-mindedly contrarian.
Yeah, what does that mean? So I'll say something low-mindedly stupid, like my wiener hurts, and then you, what do you do?
You should see a doctor about that. I don't know. High-mindedly contrarian. Stop sitting on your wiener.
There you go.
If it persists for more than 4 hours, consult a physician.
Yep. There's some nice high-minded contrarianness. Fantastic. Thank you for your emails. We want to keep those coming to us. Filmsack@gmail.com. What is our next movie? I forgot to write it down.
Our next movie is it's going to be Night of the Comet.
Oh my gosh. Night of the Comet.
Love it.
I can't wait. Now, some of you will notice, if you're listening to this now, you already know this, but the show, this particular episode released a little early because I'm not going to be around on the day I normally do it. But this next episode will be just normal time. It'll be Thursday night or Friday morning. So just to let you know, this isn't a new schedule. It's kind of a one-off thing due to schedules, but Night of the Comet, man.
Can't wait.
Freaking love that. Talk about your dystopian ideas of what the future's like without, normal society.
And the following week, we may be messing with Michael Douglas's head in the game.
Yes. That's in my list of shame. I've never seen it. So I
love that movie.
Yeah. Pretty excited to see that as well. Yeah. Somebody suggested all over Twitter we should be watching Thor. I don't know why. That feels too new and not sackable.
Unless they're talking about the Sci-Fi Channel
version. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, like one of the other, because it's like, I think it's actually on Netflix. There's like... Thor, Norse God or something.
Yeah, well, yeah, there is another one on Netflix. The new Thor, the Avengers Thor, is not a FilmSack film.
Doesn't feel that way.
Kenneth Branagh trying to bring Shakespeare to comic books.
Oh, wow. He's right, though. Thor is on streaming?
It is streaming. Wow. Yeah, it is streaming. Wow. I knew that. I think that is the one they're referring to, is they want us to do the new one. Yeah. I don't understand it. I think that's a weird request.
I want to see Adventures of Thunderstorm, Return of Thor. Mm-hmm.
Now that I could do. Yeah. The people that brought you Mansquito, right?
Right.
Okay. And its various sequels. Why have we not seen a Mansquito movie?
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Super Shark versus Mega Octopus or something.
Fan Jesse. Hold on. I got to grab this real quick.
Sharktopus.
Oh, I don't know where I put it. But a fan of the show sent a bunch of DVDs that include a bunch of Roger Corman stuff in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Roger Corman collection? Because I see that maybe, at Walmart all the time.
Maybe. So if it is, whatever it is, we're going to figure out a way to disseminate that and like do more Corman movies because why the hell have we not done everything they've done?
Yeah. He's classic.
He's still around, kicking it.
Yeah.
Making movies in his 80s, I think.
Star Crash was really good. You guys just didn't get it.
You don't understand. If you, George Lucas.
All right. My Fantastic Four was better.
I do have that on VHS, but I have no way to watch it. It's just sitting over there.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Hey, everybody within the sound of my voice, thank you for joining us for this episode of FilmSack. We'll be back with another one real soon. Again, that film is Night of the Comet, so be prepared. It's on Netflix streaming now. you'd like to visit the website, you can, filmsack.com. If you'd like to email us, please do, filmsack@gmail.com. And if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, it's easy. We're at Filmsack. Leave us a review on iTunes. We love that when you do. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
That's me.
We'll see you next time.
Can you imagine how much hairspray they must have used on Torture Bikini Girl? The entire Torture Bikini room must have smelled like Vidal Sassoon.
Oh, dude.
Nice.
Yeah, we went blue there at the end there.
Can we say that word?
I don't know.
I guess we can.
Barbara Kopetsky died in the war. I'm Barb Wire. This big guy, he's big and fat. He has a white beard. He wears a red suit. He lives at the North Pole. And he goes by the name of Kringle. Kris Kringle.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.